Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning. Hey there, cats, kittens. Welcome to Five Star Radio here at halfcredit.com. You know the deal. There's news kind of to talk about. Oh, I felt like I was just going to do a show, i.e., I'm walking the dogs and I'm bored. And there's stuff to talk about, probably stuff to write about, stuff to love, stuff to hate. Who knows? Check out the site though. Make sure you go to halfcredit.com because that's how you listen to this show. Also, it's been a good week, writing-wise. I don't know. It's actually been very, very good. I'm just kind of unenthusiastic about in life in general right now. It's a really nice day out, though. It smells nice. So then, the news. Where to start? I guess the news of the day. I think it actually came out today. Was the press conference thingy that Saki Gigabara, the former dude bagman for Pride, announced the plans for the big, who fuck knows what they're going to call it, the name of the show, in Japan for the fighting. The name of the promotion will be R-I-Z-I-N, I presume Rising, or Ryzen, Ryzen Fighting Federation, RFF. I assume, you know, Rising, Land of the Rising Sun, they're rising from the ashes, we're new promotion, blah, 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 blah. With Saki Gabara involved, again, we know this means it's just a front for mafia money, I guess. That also explains why Fyodor's involved. They got TV, I guess. Fuji TV. It's going to air something sometime. No one really knows why, what, and when. Because, okay. Another news, UFC has announced a TV deal where they're going to be on NBC at 3 in the morning on a Tuesday. Like, what and when means a lot. The word TV means shit. They announced a supposed one-man or one-night heavyweight. Of course it's heavyweight. Japan. A tournament where the winner gets $500,000. I don't think Fyodor's going to be in this tournament. Who the fuck knows who's going to actually be fighting on this thing? I cannot think of anyone out there that you would want to see fight in this tournament, let alone that would be worthy of being paid $500,000 fucking dollars. No opponent for Fyodor was formally announced, although there's been whispers, as I predicted, of big, tall Asian guy. In this case, it's some dude who's like 1-0 and is probably not very good. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And in this case, the promotion is the same fucking thing as always, because the main event is going to be Sakuraba, who is still technically alive, taking on Shin Aoki, and what will be an easy loss for Sakuraba, but at least he probably won't get hurt too bad. Aoki can't really hurt anybody with punches. It's Japan, it's a freaky, it's the first time I've ever really, I can't believe I'm seeing this now, where Sakuraba's the big guy in the freak show fight. Because Aoki obviously competes, actually, he's probably, to be quite honest, Sakuraba's probably really not that much bigger. I mean, he is now, but in his prime, he wouldn't have been. Saku was walking around in the 70s, not cut. Aoki's always fought, I mean, in Japan at 70, in the United States at 55. I think he can get to 45. I mean, it's a little bit of a size difference, but not too much. The difference, obviously, is Aoki's still in his prime enough fighter, and Saku isn't. That's really sad, but whatever. There's Japan. They don't give a shit about human beings. Like, I'm convinced that Japan, just as a country, does not care about humans. Whatever. It's a joke. All of it's a fucking joke. Like, seriously, this is not Pride. Give it up. Pride's dead. I loved watching Pride back when it was in its greatness, glory age. It's my favorite era of MMA. It's great. It's wonderful. Stop trying to fucking recreate it. And that's all they're doing. They're just trying to recreate shit. This isn't a new idea. There are no new ideas here. You're bringing back an almost 40-year-old fucking Fyodor and almost 50-year-old Sakuraba, and those are your headliners? And it's not like, and there's no great super-duper talent that they're going to find. You know why? Because if there is, it'd be in the fucking UFC. And guess what? Shinya Aoki ain't catching on. They have tried to fucking strap her. They have, you know, just hooked up the Japanese MMA scene sled to this fucker, and he ain't pulling it. He is never going to get over as a big star that they want because... And I understand why they want him to be. He's good. You know, if he could connect and get over to the masses, it'd be great to have him as a star because he's somebody that's very good who you could put in there in very high-level competitive fights and he'd stand a chance of winning and who you could easily just match up against lower-level names and he could almost definitely win. So, yeah, no, I totally get that, but it ain't fucking happening. Japan's fucking dead. I don't care how much money they got. They're not going to have UFC money. They're really not. Because, you know, UFC's got fucking more money. That's just what it is. It's good for the fighters. At least we'll create some bargaining. There's now going to be kind of two real options, if you will. I mean, assuming this becomes a real promotion and not a one-off thing, which is what I'm guessing is going to be the case. I mean, what the fuck? You know, it's going to feature a lot of Russians, I'm sure of that, and a lot of Japanese. So it's going to basically be Russia versus Japan for most of the show fights, and fine. I mean, if the shows are entertaining, then they're entertaining. Good. I hope they are. I hope it works. I don't think it's going to. It's just like the fucking Bellator show. Bellator's way better off trying to be something different than be something that was. You can't recreate it. You can't do it. You can look at some of the things that worked and try to use those, but this isn't even like, oh, we're taking the best. Like, no, they're just trying to fucking out and out copy it. Thinking there's this great groundswell of nostalgic support that'll come rising back. No, this is not, at least not in the United States, in Japan. Honestly, I don't think it's here either. Fighting in Japan was a fad. It's a fad culture. By definition, Japan's a very faddish culture. And they had, you know, the right stars at the right time and all over the place between Sakuraba becoming, you know, this hero in many respects. And then they lucked into having, it wasn't even like the biggest gates because it's him. We had Yoshida show up and he could compete and do well. Like, and that, obviously the Bob Sapp phenomenon took off, and Masato over in K1 Max. I mean, they just had this perfect storm. Kiyamoto, all these guys. There's no evidence that any of this shit exists. We have not seen a single guy come into the UFC who's Japanese, who in any way, shape, or form, I would think, oh, this guy could be a star, let alone great. And I think that's a big problem, is that a lot of the blooms off, like, it's been exposed. And to some degree, it doesn't always matter. Like, it's never really mattered. I mean, they fucking have Bob Sapp fighting Ernesto Hoost and all this shit. And popping ratings and popping bottles in the club. Whatever. I'm white. Just throw your hands up. Somebody's gonna. I hope some guys get paid, and I hope they save their money. I hope they also realize how to save money and aren't fucking morons like Jose Aldo, who's out there saying we need a union. Good, not a bad idea. That's fine. Organize one. Although you of all people should learn, the better way to do it is to have support, and not alienate people and be a dick. Also, he says that fighters should get a salary, like a monthly salary, which fine. You have that. You just get paid all at once. Every 3 months or 4 months or so, you get paid. If you want, I'm sure the UFC would just take your money from your... You would get paid on fight night and split it into, you know, monthly payments. It's the same thing. I have no idea why you would think anything would be different. Like, they're going to give you the money. It's one way you have to manage it yourself. The other way, you're letting them manage it. And I'd rather have control over my money than them. They could go belly up. They could take your money. You could die before you get to have it all. Like, what the fuck? Does he really think he's going to keep his current contract and then they're still going to give out money on top of it? It's the same thing. If you're fighting, your value is your value as a fighter. It's a very, very easy playing system. Like, they say, Jose Aldo, you are worth $1 million for us for a fight. Okay, $1.2 million, we'll say. Make it easy for me, math-wise. They can either pay him $1.2 million for that fight, or he can, get paid $100,000 every month. What's the fucking difference? There's fucking no difference at all. Oh, for some of the, he's like, oh, I can get by. Some of these other guys struggle. Yeah, they're fucking struggling. So the UFC is not going to pay them more. All you're advocating for is more money for fighters, which, again, that's fine. But don't think that it's going to come just if like you're going to get your current normal pay for your fights, and they're going to just decide, yeah, fuck it, let's give guys a salary as well. First of all, you're not employees. Secondly, like, they're going to just measure your value. Every fighter has a value. We know what it is because they agree to fight for it. And some guys don't. Some guys find the greater value outside of the UFC. And that's the beauty of the free market, if you will. And especially right now with the way the sponsors are going, you're seeing guys like Josh Thompson, who by all rights is still, a solid fighter. I wish he was better, but he's still a solid fighter. And he made a decision for purely financial reasons to go to Bellator. Because they gave him a better offer. He could make more money there. And so he did. And that's it. The UFC judged what his value was. Bellator judged what they thought his value was. And that's it. I don't know what Jose thinks is going to be different. Like, they're not going to pay you anymore. You just want to be paid differently, I guess. No, it's fucking stupid. Whatever. Like, everybody's stupid, except for me. I'm smart. The other big news so far this week. That's why we've been running this piece of mine. It's been a slow news week, to be honest. Is, T.J. Dillashaw has left Team Alpha Male. He is, I guess, starting or becoming the major player in, I don't know what they're calling it. I think it's basically a grudge. He's going full-time with Dwayne Ludwig, which is fucking hilarious now because, Conor said, watch it, it's going to happen. And I think that, to be honest, a lot of this was inevitable. It had to be done. What are you going to do? I mean, with the public animosity between Ludwig and Faber and the words spoken lately, it would have been very, very difficult for TJ to train basically both places. Even if they, nobody would tell him, no, you can't. The truth is, like, if you're going to train at multiple places, you still need somebody overseeing it. Like, there needs to be somebody, I would say, besides the fighter himself, running the ship and making sure things are on time, making sure your weight's correct, Johnny Hendricks. Making sure you hire somebody if the weight's not correct. All kinds of stuff like that. I don't think you need to be at one camp. I think that the best system is really to have camps that are affiliated with one another loosely. For a while there, you kind of saw a little bit of that with TriStar and Greg Jackson, where George St. Pierre would train at both, obviously. He became more and more involved with TriStar, which is fine. It worked out. It obviously worked for him. American Top Team and Rufus Sport have basically somewhat of an affiliation now. And I think right now these affiliations are growing out of the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructors. Because there's basically the Carlson Gracie lineage, which is American Top Team, Brazilian Top Team, all those guys. and Ricardo Laborio, running jiu-jitsu and basically ATT in general, was one of the guys there under Carlson Sr. Talked at length at times, but Daniel Vanderlei at Duke Rufus got his black belt from Carlson and all that shit as well. And Rufus, even before Daniel was involved, their black belts who were training there were Carlson guys. I mean, they've been closer to that side of the lineage. Elsewhere, you're just... And I think it's good. I think it's a really good thing. You're seeing guys like Tyrone Woodley who can go and train for a while up in Milwaukee. Then he can have his own training center he's building in Missouri. And he could probably go down to ATT in Florida. I think it's very good for guys. I think it's the best way to basically do MMA going forward, because there's always been this problem of, in order to be good at the sport, you have to train with very good people. That's obvious. There's no secret. More so than a lot of other sports, compared to boxing, where you can bring in one or two, guys to be your sparring partners. But, in MMA, you need a full team around you. Iron sharpens iron and all that shit. Hence my giant rant and talk about how, isolating a guy due to a steroid failure, PED failure, where he can't train with people, ends his career and all that stuff. But yeah, by creating these, like I say, kind of affiliations, it'll allow guys to basically fight within their own camps. Tyrone Woodley can go train at Rufus for a while and go down to Florida, and if by some weird thing happens, where Ben Askren was actually signed to the UFC, Askren, who trains and has always trained and probably always will train out of Rufus, we'll just keep doing there, and Woodley can go down to Florida or go to Missouri or wherever he wants to go. Alan Belcher's got I don't know if it's an ATT affiliation, but he's got an affiliation in Missouri as well. And I think it's great. We're seeing too many of these camps, you're seeing camps split because it's inevitable. And I think rather than have them split or having the fighters have to fight somebody from within their own camp, and then the camp has to be kind of divided along each fighter, like, if you two are going to fight, all right, well, this coach won't coach this, and this won't do that, and blah, blah, blah. Just, they go to the other gym. And they can say they don't have to be true, locked in. This is absolute. But I think it definitely helps, and I think it's good for the fighter's growth. The best thing for training is often breaking up your cycle, getting new training partners, getting different styles. I know personally in jiu-jitsu, going from one school to another school, even within the same affiliation, if I trained at a certain gym here or a certain gym there, it's just different. If you train with some suburbanites, you're going to get generally a less intense pace, but still, guys who can be pretty good. You train in the city, it's a little more intense, but it's maybe not as technical. And then you get used to your training partners. I try to at least, personally mix up the times of day I train at, because the school I go to, they have, multiple classes a day for everybody, and yeah, I usually try to go at noon. That just works out best for my schedule. And it's good. I mean, you still get enough good guys there. I mean, fuck, the other day, Wednesday, I was practicing, and there were more black belts than anybody. Just fucking absurd. I even said something, I go, oh, this is going to be a bad day. And it really wasn't. But there are guys who I see on the team. They don't go at noon because they have real jobs or whatever. They train at night. And so if I train at night, I'll see them. And even within that, I can get a different look. And they have different strengths. And you might not even be training against somebody who knows your game specifically and says, oh, well, you always like to throw this right hand after that left hook or something like that. so much as you may just be facing somebody who's very good at dealing with that aspect of your game naturally. Like, their game just happens to be the perfect counter for yours. And over time, you might get stuck in a rut because you're always coming up against the same wall. And neither one of you are growing. And then when you get somebody else, it's completely different. You go, oh, shit, my stuff actually works. You know, when I'm good at it, it works a lot more often than I thought it did. This is great news. Or similarly, you might find out, shit, that thing I thought I was really good at, turns out I'm not good at that. But it turns out something else I am good at works better. And so I think that, you know, again, having these affiliations loosely like that, allowing guys to feel like they can go train someplace else without betraying someone, so to speak, I think it's good. I think it's good to mix it up for entire camps. Again, if Tyron Woodley can spend an entire camp at Duke Rufus as opposed to American Top Team, he's going to get a different look. It's going to be a more striking-oriented versus American Top Team is a little bit probably more jiu-jitsu-based. It started by jiu-jitsu guys. And I would think American Top Team's a little bigger, like the main school in Florida, bigger and probably has, as a general rule, more UFC guys than like a Rufus Sport would. Not that the highest level guys are going to be any different. And again, Rufus is fucking Anthony Pettis, if you will. I mean, full stop right there. That's your guy. But obviously, you know, Rufus has produced a number of high quality UFC guys. But you don't always need that. Sometimes you need a training camp where you don't go 100% every day to give yourself a little bit of a physical break. And even a mental one or a mental boost. There is something to be said for beating the shit out of somebody. Like, I'm not good at that. Like, some people are just like, they like to pick on white belts. Makes them feel like a big man and shit like that. And I get, you know, you go out there and they beat them up and they feel really good about themselves. I tend to be, well, one, actually, I tend to be very, I'll just roll with anybody. Inevitably, it's always, you know, guys who are very good blue or purple or above level belts. So I'm always getting challenged on some level. And so I don't usually always get that, yay, look at me, I'm great feeling. And then sometimes every once in a while, some white belt will say, hey, can I roll? And I'll be like, sure. And there's a couple white belts I call my white belts, like guys who, when they train, they like to roll with me. But that to me is a little different because I'm literally guiding them through to positions and things like that. But sometimes there'll be somebody who shows up and doesn't, I don't know them, and I roll with them. I go, oh yeah, I just beat the shit out of them. I go, huh, I kind of feel pretty good about myself. But that confidence can help. One, it makes training more fun. Like, wrestlers are very famous with the embrace the grind, which is basically, you know, embrace losing. Embrace every day of your life sucking ass. Like they're not happy. Practice isn't fun, but they get better. That's why they embrace the grind. And that's fine. That's a great mental attitude to have. And I think most high-level athletes have that ability. But I also think that for your confidence, you need to feel like a world killer if you want to get in there. Stop eating that fucking popcorn bag and don't pee on it, you weirdo. So again, you know, maybe if you go to a quote lesser camp or whatever, for a little while, you can feel like, shit, I am a little better at this than I thought. And maybe you're a little more willing to try it out and you get a little quicker. You do things more, blah, blah, blah. How this all ties back to T.J. Dillashaw, who fuck knows? You guys have been listening. I never have any idea what I'm saying on these shows. I never have a fucking clue what's going on, what I've said. I have a general vague notion of the topics, but again, it's just, you know, diarrhea right out, and then I'm done, and I'm like, huh, something happened. I don't know what exactly. But yeah, again, TJ, he made his decision, and he made the decision that was best for him. And for that, I can't fault the guy. It's a short sport, you know, it's a short life in the sport. For most people, especially, you know, at the highest level, everybody's gunning for you, and unless you're that rare once-in-a-lifetime Anderson Silva who can get away with steroids and be on top for a decade guy, you know, look at Frank Mir. I mean, again, he's been in the UFC for a long, long time, a decade plus. But he's not really been at the highest level that entire time. He's been up and down, but he's had his, you know, he's fought top level guys, and he's also had fights against guys like Anthony Hardonk. He's just, he's good for him. He's kept a career going, but, you know, your big, that big chance to make all the money comes obviously on top. Unless you're Donald Cerrone, where you're the only guy who can just make a lot of money by accumulating it, by the number of fucking fights you have. You gotta do what's best for you, and hey, TJ, you know, I'm sure it was tough for him. Uriah Faber really was a mentor. Faber did bring him into the sport, recruited him and all this shit. But if he's got something that clicks and he likes the way that he works with Dwayne Ludwig, if that works better for him, and even if it's bullshit, even if Dwayne's not actually giving him any better instructions or doesn't know anything more, because again, you look at the guys at Alpha Male. One, they're all very good. Two, you know, Martin Kampman is a coach. I mean, Kampman's outstanding. He's a very smart, very technical guy. But you know what? Some coaches you will click with, and some you won't. And that's just the reality of life. It's the reality of everything. You know, there's just some guys who, the whatever reason, their style of coaching, the way they speak, the way they think, you work better with it. I've trained some of the best in the world of MMA and Jiu-Jitsu. I love bragging about it. Guys who are, some guys I deal with very well. The way they coach, their approach to things is excellent. And then there's some guys who are, again, they're just as good. They're high level black belts and all this shit. There's one guy I think of in particular. Nice guy. He's well spoken. He knows his details. And I don't like his approach to shit at all. It doesn't work for me. It's just his background or whatever, however he comes in life, it just doesn't click. There's other guys who work for me in certain aspects, cardio-wise. There's other guys who work for me as far as technique goes. That's the way of it. And it's not like they're all bad or good. It's just different. And again, if TJ's happy, if he trusts Dwayne Ludwig, he's got the world championship and he's got to make as much money as possible. It's also probably cheaper to live in Colorado than California. But, hey, he made the decision. And I applaud TJ for making the decision. Because that's a big boy decision. That's a really tough one. One, you're risking alienation. You're risking something that's a good thing. The new training center, it sounds like it's going to have a lot of good guys. Elliot Marshall's going to be doing jits there, and he's proven that, you know, former UFC fighter, but also shown at times to be pretty good developing, the jiu-jitsu game for guys. Dwayne, obviously, whatever people have to say, he's certainly shown the ability to work well with TJ. And I think as an overall coach, Dwayne Ludwig always struck me as somebody that got by because he's very smart and knew a lot about the game. And they're going to have plenty of guys. I think Nate Marquardt's going to be out. There's going to be a lot of guys out there. It's fucking Colorado. Actually, it used to be a kind of a third base there for Greg Jackson and the TriStar guys. Marquardt and all of them. Come on, you fuckers. I am a proper gentleman. To my dogs? I don't know, whatever. But yeah, again, that's not easy because he's leaving Team Alpha Male, which is an elite school. Oh, he was their champion, and the other guys, blah, blah, blah. They didn't come up, fuck off, they came up short, or whatever. It's like, first of all, Uriah ruled his division for years, facing very good fighters. Chad Mendes is a fucking world champion-level fighter. And he's proven that by hanging in there with the best on earth. You look up and down, you don't challenge for the titles, plural, multiple times, in many different weight classes, and not be pretty fucking good. And they got guys like Lance Palmer, who nobody even really knows, who's the World Series of Fighting, featherweight champion. And he's from Alpha Male, and he's just starting, kind of. He beat Rick Glenn, who was 45 at Rufus. and Rick was a former champion there, and Team Alpha Male and Rufus, they have a very strong camaraderie because their jiu-jitsu coaches are very, very close. And to leave a team like Team Alpha Male, which is having new blood come in, new blood emerge, it's not like they're a stagnant team. They're developing Paige Van Zandt, and I think a lot of the credit for her development can go to them. Absolutely, I think that they're helping her. It's a small guy school. It's basically the American Novo Nyao. And so for TJ to leave that, it'll probably work out for him. But if it doesn't, I mean, he's the one taking the risk. Would they welcome him back? I would think so. I don't know. I mean, look, Team Alpha Male and Uriah Faber, they said the right things. They went out and they're like, basically like, we thank you, TJ. You're very, very good. All of that. So it's a very, very short statement. Just totally professional. Exactly what you would say. Behind the scenes, probably mad as hell. I don't blame him. You lost your world champion. I mean, it makes your team weaker. Not just from a prestige perspective, but also just as far as now the guys at Team Alpha Male have one less amazing guy to train with. It's never good to have anybody leave a camp like that. It's not like there's been these stories that TJ's a camp cancer or anything like that. He seems like a nice enough guy. But shit, you know, he's doing what he's got to do. It takes a little bit of the edge off of the, honestly, I think it actually does take a little bit of the edge off of his fight with TJ Dillashaw. I'm sorry, Dominic Cruz. TJ Dillashaw is TJ Dillashaw. He's not fighting himself. Except for in the shower. Wah, wah, wah. Because now the crew is, you know, I hate Team Alpha Male thing. You know, he's not a Team Alpha Male. But I do like that Dominic Cruz is very aware, and I'm crediting myself with this for, you know, the whole TJ just basically doing what I did and blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'm going to show you I'm the real master of my style and all that stuff. And I still lament the loss of Dominic for all these years. The best fucking mixed martial artist on the planet. And we may never actually have seen what he could have done. As amazing as he was. And I've been over that. And I'll go over that again. Because that's what I do. I just repeat myself. It's like I read all these articles. People, I got this new scoring system. And all I can think of is, I literally came up with this shit a decade ago. And it was new then. I like to think it was new then. I was smarter and ahead of the game. And I'm like, who gives a shit? Nothing's fucking changing. That's why I get so annoyed by what I call unrealistic proposals. People are like, oh, well, it's so sensible. Can't we just have the 12 to 6 elbow? Well, just because it isn't happening. Should it happen? Yes. Might it happen? Possibly. But stop acting like, oh, well, this is, it's so simple. Duh. I was like, well, yeah. Like, oh, the scoring system is screwed up. We need to change it. Yes, we all know that. It ain't going to. And if it does, it's going to be a very slow process. I mean, shit, for all the talk of people, oh, we need to have, you know, use the full 10 points or whatever. First of all, it's always funny when people come up with a new scoring system. It still uses 10 points. And it's always the same. Because everybody knows what makes sense. You know, have more draw rounds or have very close rounds be 10-9. Pretty solid wins be 10-8, and the big dominant ones be 10-7 or whatever, right? You're just weighting the rounds a little bit more. I've seen some people want to weight later rounds, which I just, no. Something about that seems really fucking weird. Like, you wouldn't do that in football. Like, oh, we decided that in the fourth quarter, touchdowns will count for double. Like, what the fuck? Like, everybody would, it's crazy. But it was really funny, and again, I've been guilty of this too, you know, I had the same idea, make more use of the 10-point system. It's like, yeah, but you're still basically just getting down to 10-7s or 10-6s. Not like anybody's actually really taking advantage of all 10 points. You know why? Because that'd be way too fucking difficult. We shouldn't have a 10-point scale for judging around. How the hell are you going to tell me the difference between a 4 and a 6? Or a 3 and a 7. Like, you kind of know broadly speaking, but in a short fight, you can have two rounds very similar, and this guy has it 2-8. or I guess it'd be 10-2 or 10-3. The next round is 10-6. And it gets, just because you're just like, I don't know. When you have that, there are like 10 different variations of a round. Which is really what it comes down to. Like, there are rounds are rounds. They are what they are. It's like I say, they're usually very close, pretty obvious, and holy crap, I can't believe that guy's alive. And, you know, okay, I should say, I can't believe that guy's alive, or that guy stifled all the other guy's offense. Mickey, leave it. Leave it. Leave it. Oh, stop eating somebody else's poop. Oh. Okay. Or they stifled someone else's offense and shut him down. Again, like, there's probably 3 or 4 different variations of a round. Past that, you won the fight. Like, what we think of as today is our, you know, what I would call the current no-brainer 10-8s, right? The ones that even, like, Texas judges get right. I mean, when you get past the no-brainer 10-8s of now, the fight's over. Like, and I think there's also something to be said for, if you get a guy that close and you haven't finished him, you didn't do as much damage as we might think. Because no real competent referee, and most of the referees are very, very competent. That's the one good thing about the sport. He's not going to let a guy take a 10-6 beating. What the fuck? You can get it in boxing because if they don't have a 3 knockdown rule and just guys get, you know, flashed and they get up and the ref looks and goes, no, you're okay. So you can get some weird shit like that. But even then, like, fuck, man. Drop a guy that many times, you don't finish him, then you probably don't deserve to have a 10-5 or whatever fucking shit it is. Although boxing is the mandatory point deductions, I guess, which is odd in and of itself. And MMA can't, because, again, the nature of the sport is what it is. So, whatever. We really just need a 1, 2, or 3 point scale or something like that. I don't know. Or judge the fight on the totality and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, just fuck off. Just, like I say, grow up and be realistic about what you're going to have in life. Pie in the sky ideas are stupid. And you're stupid for suggesting them. I literally am talking to so many different people right now. I didn't even get to cover the idea that I saw floated by certain people that we should get rid of the flyweight division. Because it doesn't make as much money. Not that it's unprofitable. And then some of these guys can move up to the next weight class, and that weight class would be more fun. Which is true. But of course, you could say the same thing. Let's get rid of 35. These guys aren't making any real money. Or finally, I think that the Cruz and Dillashaw will be one of the bigger, you know, fights at that weight class in a long time. Or we could have done it for 45. Josie Aldo wasn't drawing shit. Ah, fuck it. Let's just get rid of that division. Move them all into 155. Some of those guys, Jose Aldo, he'd be able to compete at 155, and he would. Would he be a world champion? Probably not. But he definitely would. And most of the guys at 145 who are in the top 10, they move up to 155. They're still going to be in the UFC. Oh, it would be deeper and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you know, out of nowhere, Conor McGregor shows up and becomes the biggest draw, male draw, at least in the sport. Yes, 125 right now is boring because it's Demetrius Johnson. But whatever. Like, again, it's the UFC. If they're not losing money, who gives a shit? We get to see good fights. If the fans are bored, first of all, some of the fights are boring, and some of them aren't. Fucking Mighty Mouse and John Dodson, especially the first fight, was a great fight. Mighty Mouse is just very, very, very good. He's too good. But guess what? George St. Pierre had some really, had, you know, that reputation of some really boring ass fucking fights too. And I think people were kind of booed a little bit there. And he was loved and they still booed him. But I remember some, you know, St. Pierre pretty much winning about his last, I don't know, 57 fights by using a jab and only a jab, but in the occasional takedown. Like, so what if the guy's too good? Eventually guys do get over. Especially in the UFC. The UFC fans seem to really come to appreciate long-term dominance. That was one of the key things got Anderson Silva over, is that after a while, one, first of all, he was an exciting fighter, and he had some charisma to him, but he was not drawing well at all for a long time. But just over time, they keep telling you this guy's the best ever, and if he keeps winning and doing it, you go, shit. Same with Ronda. You might as well tell everybody in the world she's the greatest thing that's ever existed. And when she goes out there and she lives up to the hype, that's great. It's only bad if you falsely hype something that has no chance of ever delivering, and then you lose credibility. And the UFC doesn't do that to their credit. I mean, Dana kind of does. It seems like every other show, it's this guy's a pound-for-pound best in the world. If it's not Jose Aldo, it becomes... It really is. Like, after every time some champion of his goes out and dominates, like, that's a pound-for-pound best in the world. Okay, that's Dana. But for the most part, like, they hyping up Ronda is special. They don't hype Connor as special like that. Not in the same way. Why are you laying down? Oh, you're going to roll around in this dog's yard. Just to taunt him. What a jerk. So, yeah, you know, shoot for the moon if you're Ronda, if you're UFC with Ronda Rousey. And make sure to stick it to the WWE Divas Revolution. Sure, yeah. Anyways, that's 5-Star Radio for this episode. Went longer than I thought it would. Because it's a really, really nice day out. So I get to walk the dogs. We'll be back soon. Because I get bored. But until then, I'm your humble host, Mike Coughlin. 5-Star Radio, halfguarded.com. Remember that, halfguarded.com.
I was a 5-star man before the internet. I'm damn sure a 5-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.